Having compassion for other people is at the top of that list. I would say commitment is at the top of that list. And also a spirit of constructive engagement. And by compassion, I don't just mean sympathy. It certainly isn't pity. It's being present, and it's also feeling with other beings. You know, during the years of the Oprah Show, I interviewed over 37,000 people one-on-one. But during all those years of talking to over 37,000 people one-on-one, I could feel what they were feeling so strongly. Sometimes it made me sick, literally. So I had to learn how to feel how others were feeling, feel with others, which is what it means to be compassionate, to feel with others without taking in all of their stuff. Being compassionate means I feel with you. It is one of the greatest qualities in the world to have if you're going to be majoring in what it takes to be a great human being. I feel with you. Means I not only am willing to walk in your shoes, it means my heart beats with yours. It means I see myself in you. It means I may not have shared that circumstance, but I know what heartbreak feels like. I know what pain feels like, and all pain is the same. It means I can feel your will to want to do better and be better. And I feel and I am with you. In spite of everything that's happened to you, I feel your need to rise. I want to help you rise. I want to rise with you.
I had a job until I could figure out what it was really, what that gave my life its purpose and meaning. And I'd gotten demoted in my job in Baltimore as an anchor woman because as they hired me and then they decided I was the wrong color and I was the wrong size and I was the wrong, you know, I had lots of problems and they were trying to take me off the air. And I was making $22,000 a year. I thought I was in heaven because I was making my age. That was as big as my dream was, just to make my age. And then I did this, they put me on a talk show one morning because they didn't know what to do with me. And I was interviewing the Carvel Ice Cream Man. It was a local talk show. And Benny, who was Mrs. Chancellor's butler or something on All My Children. Anyway, my soap opera star, who wasn't the lead star. Remember Benny? Yeah. Benny and the Carvel Ice Cream Man. That's how I cut my teeth. And I finished that show. So it's not about the stars themselves or whoever the guests were. But I felt like this is what I'm supposed to do. All these years have been misplaced in news because I couldn't relate to news. I was a news reporter and I'd be out on the stories and I'd be crying with the people. And I felt that I was exploiting the people with news. I couldn't, you know, put a microphone in people's face when they were going through tragedies and stuff. I just was so emotional. I was always getting little notes from my boss about, cut that out, you need to stop. So, but the moment I did that talk show, I felt like, oh, I can be myself. And that was August 14th, 1978. And that was the beginning of fulfilling the calling. And so since that time, August 14th, 1978, I've never had a problem with energy. Now, when I was working in news, I used to be exhausted all the time. Just exhausted all the time because I hated it. And the reason I didn't quit is because I'm not a quitter, number one. And because my father was like, better not quit that job. You're making $22,000 a year. Who's going to pay a black woman $22,000 a year? You're never going to make that kind of money again. You better save half of it. So I was reluctant to quit and think about doing something else because I thought, okay, everybody wants to be an anchor woman. At the time, that was like supposedly a big deal, being an anchor woman. So I thought, okay, I won't. I'll just stay with this until I can figure out what is the best thing to do. And interestingly enough, I was applying for what I wanted to do. I felt like I needed to be able to talk. And at the time, the only thing that was available was Good Morning America or the Today Show. So I called up this agent and I asked if he would accept my tape because I wanted to be like a substitute for Bryant Gumbel. And he said to me, there was only going to be one Bryant Gumbel. And so there wasn't going to be another one, that they weren't going to let another black person on that show. He said that to me. And interestingly enough, he called me last week because somebody else mentions it. to say he never said it, but he did say it. And I said to him, you know what? If you're ever told that, you never forget it. If somebody ever says to you, if you're ever rejected in that way, you never, ever, ever forget it. I said, but it's okay. I did okay. You did okay. It's all right. It's all right. But the answer to your question is, if you can find what is your passion, if you find what you love, you never get tired. Or if you do get tired, you're fueled by the energy of your work. So I know that I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing at this time. I also know that what this show can do in terms of being a voice in changing the world, it's just the beginning of what this show can do. It's fun to do things like this, but it's necessary to do things like this in order to be able to do the bigger, grander things, to change what happens to the face of children in Africa, for example, or what happens to education with kids in this country. So I believe that that what has happened to me is really the beginning of the greater passion to come. But if you find out what you're supposed to do, and you know what you're supposed to do by how it feels, you know, people wait on the voice of God to be the Moses in the burning bush. I think that was only Bible talk, you know, because he doesn't come to burning bushes for people. He comes through your heart. He speaks through your heart, through your feelings. And so you know what if you're doing the right thing, if it feels like it's right to you. And when you hit the thing that feels right, when you know it's the right thing, you know it's right because it gives you your juice. And you know it's right because you would do it for nothing. You would do it for nothing and find a way to be able just to do it in order to be able to continue. That's how you know you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
So how do I define success? Let me tell you, money's pretty nice. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you that it's not about money, because money is very nice. I like money. It's good for buying things. But having a lot of money does not automatically make you a successful person. What you want is money and meaning. You want your work to be meaningful, because meaning is what brings the real richness to your life. What you really want is to be surrounded by people you trust and treasure, and by people who cherish you. That's when you're really rich.
For me, colored girl, Negro child, growing up in Mississippi, that one of the greatest gifts I was ever afforded was not to have been put in a segregated school system. Had I been put in a segregated school and taught in a segregated school system that said you're less than because you're a woman and you're less than because you're a colored woman, I probably wouldn't be here today. I would have had to then overcome that belief, that conditioning of a belief. But because I was raised by a grandmother who raised me in the church, and I went to church, Sunday school, lived in the church, and I would sit there, second pew on the right, third row, every Sunday, just taking it all in. And I would listen to the stories, listen to the Bible stories, and I would hear that through God all things are possible. I would hear the story of Jesus talking about if you have the faith of a mustard seed. And you know, as many years later that I actually saw a mustard seed, I could not believe what a mustard seed actually looked like. Have you ever seen a mustard seed? Now Jesus said, if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could move mountains and anything was possible. Now, I heard this as a kid and I really believed it. And so the question is, what do you believe? Do you believe that you are worthy of happiness? Do you believe that happiness, success, abundance, comfort, fulfillment, peace, joy, love is a part of your birthright? Is that what you believe, or do you believe something else? Because you will manifest the life that you believe. I've always known that no matter what my belief is, I'm going to be all right. Why? Because I have that faith of a mustard seed.
I have always known this about celebrity. The real power of being somebody that somebody knows. And I really think that the only difference between being famous and not is that more people know your name. So the only difference between understanding that is understanding that what Selma has done, what Susan has done, what Anna has done, Rebecca has done, what Jim has done, what I've done, you too can do. Because true philanthropy comes from living from the heart of yourself and giving what you have been given. How will you do that? How will you use your personality, the energy of your personality, to serve that which is your soul's calling? I know this for sure. Any life, no matter how fantastic it is, how glorious it seems, how much attention you receive, how much square footage you have, any life and every life is enhanced by the sharing and the giving and the opening up of the heart space. Your life gets better when you can find a way to share it with someone else. So what we've done, you can do. The real empowerment comes when every person leaves this room and makes a decision. Makes a decision. Maybe that decision is that you will write a check and support some of the wonderful organizations you've heard here today. But the true decision is, how will you use yourself? How will you use everything that you have been given to serve that which is greater than yourself? How will you use that to become truly, authentically empowered? Now, it is a beautiful thing to receive an award and to be on the cover of Variety. Thank you very much. It's a beautiful thing. But the true reward is in the lives that you are able to touch and the people who you know you have impacted. I think some people think that, are under the impression that I was born empowered, that I was born coming out of the womb, ready to interview a Klansman, then cut to commercial, we'll be right back. But the truth is, I know very well what it's like to be marginalized, to be told either subtly or quite directly that my contribution isn't or wasn't welcome, that my face was invisible, and that my needs were an affront. So back when I was doing the news in Baltimore, I asked to be paid the same as my co-anchor, who did exactly the same job as I was doing. And I expected that I would be compensated. So I went in and I asked that I would get the same amount of money. So he was doing the same job I was doing, except that he called me babe all the time. Anyway, I was told by my news director and by the general manager, because first I went to the news director, then I went to general manager, and I was told that because I was a single woman who didn't have a mortgage and I didn't have kids, that I was not entitled to earn the same kind of money as the man who was sitting next to me doing the same thing. And I realized in that moment that my employers did not get it. They did not understand my value. But you know what? I did. So cut to AM Chicago. The team's hard at work, and they had been working for a long time. And after a year or so, we were asked to be syndicated. That work began to pay off. And before long, we were now no longer called AM Chicago. We're the National Oprah Winfrey Show. I got a raise. This is before I owned myself. But my producers did not. So I went into the boss at the time, and I asked that my producers, who incidentally were all female, I asked that they would be given a pay raise increase. And my boss, this is 1986, said, "Why? They're only girls. What do they need more money for? Girls." I've used the word affectionately sometimes, referring to women as girls, and there was no affection in his tone. It was absolutely condescending. So, you know, it takes a while to develop a voice, but once you have it, you damn sure better use it on stuff that matters. So I took a deep breath in that moment and said, either they're going to get raises or I'm going to sit down. I'm not going to work if they don't get paid more. I would like to believe that I could have spoken that kind of truth to misogyny, even if I'd been all by myself. But here I was,
on the brink of finally getting what I really wanted and had been working many years for, a national show. I mean, I might have been too intimidated to stand my own ground against this guy if I were actually alone. But here's the thing, you're never alone. You're never alone. The sovereign sound of Maya Angelou's voice was pushing me forward that day, whispering, "I come as one, but I stand as 10,000. So when I was faced with the opportunity to advocate for my producers, I silently called on some of the 10,000 and walked into my boss's office, hand in spirit with the women who had come before me. I could feel Bessie Smith and Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald and Pearl Bailey and Sarah Vaughan and Lena Horne clutching their green books looking for a place to eat while they sang in supper clubs for whites only. And I could feel Recy Taylor and Rosa Parks refusing to relinquish their dignity in the face of death threats. All these women were with me that day walking into the office in Chicago, as was Diana Carroll and Petula Clark and Joan Baez and Mary Tyler Moore and Moms Mabley and Barbara Walters and all of the astonishing women whose names none of us will ever even know, despite their sacrifice. And I'm pretty sure I even heard Shirley Chisholm urging me on with this thought: if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. And I understood that there were so many times that many women from my mother's generation and God knows my grandmother's generation who were forced to grit their teeth and just take it because standing up for themselves wasn't even an option. The risk was too great and they knew it. But they also knew in their bones what my dear friend Maya put so eloquently into words when she says, "You may not control all the events that happen to you, but you can decide not to be reduced by them." Because these women and so many others like them made the decision not to allow themselves to be reduced by the many injustices they were subjected to, I found the strength to act, if not just for myself, not just for my producers, but for all the women who, in their ingenious ways, subverted the rules, laid the foundation, and pushed the envelope just a little bit further for me. If I leave you with nothing else, just know this for sure. There is not one thing that has ever happened to you, not one experience, not one encounter, not one crisis, not one joyful thing that hasn't happened just to make you better and help you rise. Every single thing you're calling in, whether you know it or not, when you figure out that you are calling it in, you actually start meditating or praying or doing or having a spiritual practice, which is the number one thing you need if you want to be successful in the world. You need something that gives back and nourishes you, regardless of what you call that. You need to fill your cup so that you can be so full your cup runneth over and you have enough to give to other people. If you don't fill your cup, you end up dried up. You end up tired, exhausted, and don't have enough to give to other people. You end up resentful every time somebody asks you because your cup is empty and now they want some of yours. So your number one job, is to fill your cup and make yourself whole. That's your job. Thank you.